Yeah, you ready? Let's get going. Good morning. I will call to order the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, August 27th, where the thermometer is going to approach 102 degrees, and welcome everybody and ask if you would please join the board as we honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you and good morning. First item of business before the board today is public comment number one. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items on today's agenda. Is there anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one moving to the microphone, we'll move on to consideration of a proclamation for the month of September 2013 as National Recovery Month in Story County. And we have our friends at YSS here. Would you guys like to come up to the microphone? Jason, would you like to come up to the microphone? If you wouldn't mind, for the record, both introduce yourself and talk us through what we're proclaiming today.
Jason Hagland with Youth and Shelter Services.
Craig Sosby with Community and Family Resources.
Welcome.
Thank you very much. As you guys know, September is SAMHSA's 24th recognition of National Drug and Alcohol and now Mental Health Recovery Month as well. And you guys have been always very supportive in Story County of how we address mental health issues, addiction, and what we do to support the community in general. And so we think it's always great when we can take a moment and recognize National Recovery Month. We are kicking off National Recovery Month this Thursday with an event at Youth Recovery House, and I have a postcard for each one of you. I think you've all been invited, but Chris Branstead will be here to recognize several members, hand out some awards for members in our community who have gone above and beyond in helping out the recovering community and addressing mental health issues. So I hope you guys can join us this Thursday at noon, and that really kicks off the month of September. And I know it's still August, but we're getting a jump on things this year. We have a lot of stuff planned in September, and we think it's great. We can spend the whole month celebrating.
Outstanding. Thank you. Thank you for being here. Let's get this read into the record. We do need to vote on it to make it official. So whereas behavioral health is an essential part of the health and one's overall wellness, and whereas prevention of mental and or substance, use disorders, disorder works, treatment is effective, and people recover in our area and around the nation, and whereas preventing and overcoming mental and or substance abuse disorders is essential to achieving healthy lifestyles both physically and emotionally, and whereas we must encourage relatives and friends of people with mental and or substance use disorders to implement preventive measures, recognize the signs of a problem, and guide those in need to appropriate treatment and recovery support services. And whereas in fiscal year 2012, 51,906 Iowans received specialty treatment for substance abuse disorder, according to the Iowa Department of Human Services. Given the serious nature of this public health problem, we must continue to reach the millions more who need help. And whereas, to help more people achieve and sustain long-term recovery, the Story County Board of Supervisors, Youth and Shelter Services, Community and Family Resources, and Ierley Ball invite all residents of Story County to participate in National Recovery Month. And now, therefore, we, by virtue of the authority vested in us by the laws of Iowa, do hereby proclaim the month of September 2013 as National Recovery Month in Story County and call upon the people of the county to observe this month with appropriate programs, activities, and ceremonies to support this year's Recovery Month.
I would move the proclamation as presented.
Second.
Motion and a second. Further conversation. Jason, anything to add?
Nope.
Clinton?
Nope.
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. It passes. Need your signatures right there. Thank you, guys.
Thank you very much.
Picture
right. We're doing now. A photo op right now?
Okay.
Really big. I want to see your teeth.
Total GM, all this weight lifting I've been doing.
You're looking great. What about you guys?
You
I'll see you on that.
No.
Oh, look at this. Kind of color.
It is a terrible color.
Friend, will you smile, please? 1, 2, 3. Now, take another one just to make sure, too. Okay. 1, 2, 3. Smile.
Thank you. You got to sign that as we walk back up.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
Tap two.
That one right there.
Oh, this one. Okay. This is for our record.
Yep. Next item on our agenda is update of the Civil War. I thought that ended 150 years ago, but maybe Brett McLean.
Okay.
And our friend Gretchen Triplett, I see her coming up with Brad as well.
We promised no cannons today.
A few less people in here than the last time you were in this room, Gretchen.
It's a pleasure to be here without my boot today. I want to, first of all, thank the Board of Supervisors for all your support and assistance in planning and carrying out the event that we held in this very room on the 14th of June. 2013, and I just can't thank you all enough for being so supportive from the very beginning. It meant a great deal to have your support. I would also like to take this opportunity, I will ask them to stand. We have a few of the members who helped plan this, and they were loyal and faithful. They attended every meeting, almost to a person, unless there was some extenuating circumstance. I want to thank Brett, who was with me from the very beginning, from the Story County Veterans Affairs, and Luke Jensen, who served, would you stand up please, Luke? He served as our secretary for most of the meetings. He is also from the Story County Veterans Affairs. Mary Laura represented the Story County Genealogical Society, which was also one of the first groups to give us their support. Wayne Messer is from the Cambridge Historical Association. Howard Hammond is from Story County Alliance and is from Slater. And I think that's it. Thank you for your help. I want you to know how much I appreciated all your help and support. Howard has a few words to say.
Did you say few?
Howard, come on up. But come while up, Howard's Howard. Coming, I'll just, having watched this thing progress, it clearly was a great group, but we would all be remiss if we didn't recognize that every group needs a great leader, and Gretchen was sure a great leader of that group putting it together.
Phenomenal job.
Precisely, she was a great leader. It was fun to be with her and the other group, in my case. I'm from Slater, and the only reason I'd like you to know that this didn't end with the activity in this room and what you just hear now. We, in Slater, pursuing our historical association, will sponsor in late September a cemetery walk, and that cemetery walk will feature three Civil War veterans that were buried in one of our cemeteries. And so we have relatives that have met three times already, and one each of each of the families is going to portray the veteran himself. So the activity triggered that when our historical group said, let's keep this Civil War thing going a little bit, and we hope we purposely planned it in September so we can gain some, hopefully, support of the school and the library local, as well as the students who might appreciate a little more the 150th and the following activities coming up in the months and year, a couple years ahead. So thanks, Gretchen, and thank you.
Thank you, Howard.
Thank you.
We have two of these books for a permanent record that will be here at the courthouse for anyone to look at. We also had planned from the beginning that we will give this information to all of the historical groups in the county, but also we want to get it out to the high schools. It won't be in this format, but we intend to get the information to them so that young people can learn about our county history. Thank you.
Very good. Outstanding.
And Gretchen, being a former social studies teacher, I mean, I can certainly appreciate the value of that. For a number of years, about 19 actually, I used to take my students on what I call a prairie walk, looking at the pioneer trails, and we went to the various cemeteries. And we would notice a lot of the families that were buried there, and it was always interesting that the GAR, I would always ask my students, what did that mean? And invariably, I probably, out of all the students that I had, I probably had no more than five that actually could initially tell me exactly what GAR stood for. And so it was always the next day's report. They had to go and research and come back. I wouldn't tell them that day exactly what it stood for, but I wanted them to actually go and understand, you know, that significance. And so I can certainly appreciate all the work that you're doing, and I think to really get into the schools and have teachers and students appreciate the vast history and those who gave their lives and others who actually paved the way for the quality of life that we have in this country today is very much appreciated. So thanks for your leadership and the veterans here in Story County as well and throughout all of our state.
Thank you. It was outstanding. It was amazing how full this room looked with the maximum occupancy of only 75. We had a full band back here sitting where
and
we
Abe
are.
Abe Lincoln.
And we had Abe Lincoln. It was a once-in-a-lifetime kind of event, and we're so appreciative. So thank you very much. Next item on our agenda is consideration of personnel actions, and we have all actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Further discussion? Toot. Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Personnel actions pass. Next item is consideration of minutes. This is from August 13th, the August 19th special meeting, and the August 20th.
Move approval.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Minutes pass. Consideration of claims.
Move approval.
Second.
Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Claims are approved. Consent agenda. We added road closures 1405, 1406, and 1407, and we added utility permits 1405, 1406, and 1407.
I'll move approval with the noted additions.
Second.
Motion and a second. Toot?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consent agenda passes. No public hearing items today. Additional items, consideration of sending an FY14 budget amendment to publication, the one and only, Lisa Markley.
I don't know if that's a compliment or not.
Some days it is.
Some days it is.
You got to sign that.
I provided you with a breakdown of the requested expenses and revenues and how it would affect the ending fund balances. Briefly, I'll talk about it a minute. A lot of the dollars that we're looking to amend in are dollars that carried over from last year that were not budgeted to be spent this year because we thought we'd have them spent last year and we didn't. So our expenses are going up 7.4%. The majority of that is the Dakin's Lake project, about $2.4 million on that one.
And let's just point out that those revenues for that were reflected in this year
in
through
FY13.
The bonding. Exactly.
And so they were in the ending fund balance, correct. Right. We are doing, there were some grants that Conservation and IRVM got after the beginning of after the fiscal year was already planned. So I'm putting revenues in and expenses in for those. We've had a couple of damages to vehicle and or buildings that the insurance has we've gotten revenue from that, so we're going to spend those this year to replace those. You know, the first budget amendment of the year is one of those I throw in whatever I know is happening and then we go from there. So as I said, our expenses are going up 7.4%. Our revenues are going up less than 1% from this amendment. Overall, we're still going to look good at an ending fund balance of about 25% with the general fund, about 11-12% with the rural fund. Those are the critical ones there. Mental health fund, we're just playing it by ears again this year. So, You have any questions for me?
No, just again, want to acknowledge how much we appreciate the details and how closely you monitor and watch things like this, and then certainly let the board be aware of any issues that from not only a standpoint of just information that we need, but to be able to fully understand, you know, how we conduct our business and plan for the future and so forth. So your expertise has just been remarkable, and we want to personally thank you for your time and effort. Sometimes you don't always hear that, but we appreciate it very much.
Always hear the bad ones.
And I just, Wayne, you're so right, but I want to point out that when we approved our budget back in March for FY14, we had budgeted for an ending fund balance, so all our reserves combined, of $9.1 million, and after this amendment, we're up to $10.3 million. Now, a lot of that goes back to what Lisa was talking about, that a lot of these amendments that are coming in were based on carryovers from last fiscal year. But anytime we can make a budget amendment and our ending fund balance goes up, something good's happening. So.
So basically what I'm saying to you is, if you approve it, if you approve the publication of, I'm going to go ahead, send it to the paper. It'll be in the paper the required length of time prior to a public hearing on September 17th at the board meeting that morning.
Okay.
I would move approval of sending the FY14 budget amendment for publication as submitted.
Second.
Further conversation. Clinton.
Aye.
Boot. Sanders. Aye. Please publish. Thanks. Next item on the agenda is consideration of license of transfer of the Microsoft Office from IT to Ames City Assessor, and I believe it's seven of them, Barb.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
What this is basic housekeeping event. The city cannot update, renew, or pay for any additional licenses unless they are listed under their name. Currently, they're under the Story County name with Matt Reese as the contact. So it's just a matter of updating this. And they did send me the invoice to prove that they had paid for these licenses. So they're paying for them, but they're still under our name. So Insight has sent them a Microsoft form to fill out that we say, yes, we're going to sign off on these. So it's basically a formality. There's no money being exchanged between us and the city. It looks like they haven't been updated since 2010, so they probably need to get on that, and they can't really do that until we sign off.
Yep.
Questions? No. I'll move approval of the license transfer.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Two.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Housekeeping taken care of. Thanks, Barb.
I think this was the easiest talk I had to do in front of the board.
consideration of CIP forms 1 and 2 after the 7, which was really a 14-day review. And I received no comments. I don't know if anybody else received any comments.
Nope.
Leanne Harder. Hi, Leanne.
I didn't receive any comments as well. And I did just hand out the forms 1 and 2 that were at the board a couple weeks ago. In addition, I did, for your benefit, include the development time. The time frame that's associated with the development of the CIP is slightly modified than what was approved by you in this past June, given the delay in getting the forms removed. But we still should be forward with a draft plan for you in November for public review, then November through December, and then action for you by January. But if approved today, these two forms would be sent out to county departments today and have them back by September 13th. And then the CIP committee or task force will review them on September 25th and start ranking and providing or developing recommendations.
Questions for Leanne?
Nope. Thank you.
Okay. The motion.
Final
yep.
So, and I will second it.
Mm-hmm. All right, we have a motion and a second. Further discussion or questions? Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It's final. Great. Next item on our agenda is discussion and consideration of resolution number 1415 for the 28E agreement for Central Iowa Recovery Services. Deb Shildroth.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good.
John Grush may be coming in at any moment. He was going to join me for this discussion, and things are moving along quickly. So
I tend to do that.
That's okay. Yeah. That's all right. What you have before you is another 28E agreement, and this one was created initially by about nine counties a year ago, and they called it Central Iowa Recovery. The focus of this group is to provide rehabilitative and support services for individuals with mental illness. And it's to help build community capacity and the kinds of services that are listed and supported by mental health and disability services redesign. Currently, there are approximately about 11 counties involved in this 28E agreement. All of the counties in our region, and then in addition to Dallas County, Greene, Guthrie, and Audubon counties. And what service is being provided at this point in time under the 28E agreement is a service called Intensive Psychiatric Rehab. And what that service does is it's individualized to the client who has a mental illness in helping them through their recovery process. And there's a lot of work that's done within groups. There's one-on-one individual kinds of work to identify what the person needs and how they want to achieve those goals. The service is meant to be complementary to any outpatient psychiatric service the person is getting, whether that's therapy or medication management, supported community living, other kinds of service. It's not meant to take place of another kind of treatment service. It's to help complement the services the person's already receiving. People move through the recovery process depending on their circumstances and where they are with their recovery. Intensive psych rehab is there for a person for up to 2 years, but they could go through that process a lot quicker. So again, it's very individualized. It is a service that's covered by Medicaid, and most of the clients in the current counties are being funded through the Medicaid Magellan stream. There are some people who are funded through their respective county just because they're waiting to be approved for disability, and then they would be on the Medicaid program as well. Are there any questions up to this point? Okay.
Just Deb, was this was the same the 28E that we talked about at our regional meeting and had originally a few counties before we formed had been a part of this, and you had mentioned that you wanted to bring this to Story County's attention because I think we were one of the few. At that time, I think they assumed that maybe we had a program similar to this, but we didn't. Yeah. And so this was something that our regional board was fully supportive of, and I think this is just part of the overall process that
sure.
We now
bringing us all together.
Mm-hmm. Yep, thank you for bringing that up, Wayne. I had originally been approached about this in May, and we were just kind of going through some of the discussion phases with other participant counties. And then about a month ago, Ron Christensen and I met with John Grush and Tim Bedford. Tim is the director of the psychiatric rehab services. So we just kind of went through and combed out some details. A couple of things that as a participant county, here's John. A couple of things as a participant county that we would be required to do. Do you want to join me up here, John?
Sure. Hi, John.
Hey, John. We'll mark that down that you were late.
I'm early on the agenda. So.
Oh, okay.
You as a board would be responsible for appointing an individual to serve on the 28E board for Central Iowa Recovery Services. There's also a $25,000 fee that we would pay in to help with cash flow purposes because there would need to be a practitioner hired to serve the Story County clients. So that would help with the cash flow part until the billing would start to be engaged, and revenue would come in from the Medicaid program, and then we might also be called upon to help find space for the practitioner. So those are the three main things. The other thing the 28E agreement does is once the intensive psych rehab services are underway, we start looking at some other services, whether that be community support services, peer support, which is a big component of core services, as well as the integrated health home movement that is starting to be implemented throughout the state. So there are other kinds of services and opportunities that this agreement would take a look at. And John, do you have anything you want to add? I talked about the member counties' responsibilities, kind of the vision for Central Area Recovery.
I mean, I think from a timing standpoint, one advantage you have now is that we started this about a year ago, and so when we initially started, we didn't know how quickly we would become cash neutral, and actually we did that within about 3 months, and now we have a history of about 7 months of being able to cash flow and make our expenses, and so I think at least from that vantage point, coming in at this time, you have that information available that you know wasn't there when we started.
You mentioned down the road there may be a need to assist with space. What type of space are you envisioning? Is this just an intake office area where people can come in and meet with prospective clients, or you know, based on what's happening in other counties, can you comment at all on that?
The practitioner would need an office, and have, you know, the computer equipment and phone and that kind of thing, and probably some kind of conference room space, which I've kind of been mulling around in my mind some options for that, because when the group work is implemented with clients, that they'll need a conference room to meet in and have that kind of facility available for the practitioner and the clients. And John, I don't know if there's anything in addition. That's what I've observed in the other counties.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And how important is it in terms of proximity to other human service programs and things of that nature? I'm just trying to think about logistics and then, you know, thinking a little bit about, you know, the remodeling and that's going on and the added space that we currently have now in the human service building as a possible location, not to mention what may or may not be available through CLP or other places, but trying to look at similar type of programs. I would hope that, you know, that would be something we would factor in the decision if and when that became something that we would need. But it would sound like in order to really serve Story County clients, we would need an intake point where they could sit and actually meet with clients and have all of that information disseminated.
Definitely. And both offices or buildings that you've mentioned have been ones that I've been thinking about. I also think it's important that it's a location that is on or near a bus line for clients to get to and from the appointments, and both the Human Services Center and CLP are on bus lines. So I think we have some good options to take a look at.
Very good. Other questions? This is the you've contracted with Central Iowa Juvenile Detention to be the employer of record for provide those services, correct?
That is correct. Initially, it had been Hamilton County, and then the switch to Central Iowa Juvenile Detention Center just occurred within the last week or two, from what I understand.
Right.
So that is the entity that's the employer of record. And these are just notes that I took from when Ron and I met with John and Tim, and there's currently about 16 staff for the IPR project. Is that?
There will be.
There will be,
yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we currently have 8 staff.
Okay.
And, yep, and we're actually, this expansion will really double that number, so.
Okay. Because we've got Tim, who's the director, and then we have Deb Rolfs, who's the clinical director, and then the practitioners that actually provide the service to the clients that are in each of the counties.
Right.
And I think at this point we're looking at just having one staff member to serve Story County initially, just to see what the referrals will be and what the critical mass and need will be. There's an allowance of 8 to 10 clients per practitioner, and I know that there's waiting lists in the other counties at this point in time. So that expansion of staff is important, and I think the demand is there.
Well, the demand is there, but then hearing you guys say, John, that in 3 months you guys were able to take it to a cash neutral kind of proposition while providing these important services, I think that speaks highly of the way you're running it.
Yeah, we really did take more of a conservative approach that we, as Deb said, we'd start with one practitioner. And then in Boone, for example, we've got a caseload there of 10 and a waiting list of 20. But before we add a practitioner, we want to make sure that waiting list was sustainable, so to speak. And it has been now for 6 months. And so now we are adding a person there.
And just so that I'm clear on Story County's role, I heard you say something about $25,000, and that would be upfront just to cash flow us getting through. But it's our expectation that this thing is self-sustaining.
Correct. And once a practitioner is hired, if it's an individual who hasn't had the specialized training in providing IPR service, then that individual has to go through all of that training before they can meet with clients and provide the service. That's a must in order for the service to be reimbursed through Medicaid. So that would help. Is it 60 hours?
It is.
Of this intensive training before they can meet with clients and provide the service.
I don't know if you mentioned it, but since this is a 2080, has Jessica had a chance to at least look at this at all? Or
yes,
that?
Jessica okay. looked at it, had a couple of questions. We got those questions answered. Great. And
it looks to me like there's a 60-day termination
right.
clause in there if
right.
anybody ever has any right. any trouble.
Good.
Other questions?
Good.
All right, then I'd look for a motion on Resolution 1415.
So move Resolution 1415, which is the 2080 Agreement for Central Iowa Recovery Services.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Further discussion? Clinton?
Aye.
Toot?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. I declare Resolution 1415 adopted and approved. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay.
So we need to have in our minds which one of the three of us is going to serve on this board, and then that will need to get on a later agenda.
Right.
Yeah, it could be a county supervisor, it could be myself, it could be any county staff that you wish.
Yeah, we have a mix. We've got two supervisors on there now, and then the rest are equivalents.
So. Okay, well, we can have that discussion a little bit later with you and then see what you think would be a good fit for it. Yeah.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you. All right, no agency reports, departmental reports. Julie Weeks came to visit us from the Central Iowa Tourism and Ames Convention and Visitors Bureau. And she always comes bearing
always
gifts.
Brings stuff.
With the new logo.
With the brand new Smart Choice new logo.
Woo!
Thank you very much.
All right. Look at there. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning. It's great to be here on this lovely summer day in Central Iowa. It has been a great summer for Story County. We had the opportunity to do a lot of destination groups this summer, which are unusual for us, but it's a market that we're starting to build up on. And some of those groups with traditional ones like Iowa Games. But this summer, we also did a Lincoln Way tour. They had an overnight in Ames and then traveled through Nevada with their cars. We had the Edsel Club, who toured the county on three different days, if you saw a bunch of Edsels driving around. We also had the North Iowa Tractor Ride, which did 3 days in Ames, but one day they went up to Roland Story, one they came to Nevada. Maxwell Collins drove their tractors around, so very good for Story County. We also had the opportunity to with Nevada with the SCORE complex, which personally I've only been out there a couple times, but I spent quite a bit of time this summer out there, and what a magnificent facility. I mean, Nevada and Story County should be extremely proud of that facility. We were able to host two weekends of state softball, but then we also had a weekend of the National Association softball tournament for girls 14 and under. We had 31 teams from 8 states, And the officials and the reports are that that is the most magnificent facility that they've ever been at, and we've already been asked to bid on that again in the future. So just an amazing opportunity. Another opportunity that came up with that in front of you, you see a community grant program. The Nevada Parks and Rec actually applied for that event, a community grant, which is part of the hotel motel tax in Ames, and they received a $5,000 grant to actually add entertainment and food and beverage to that opening ceremony for all those teams and invited the public. So we had several thousand people over there, and it was just a really great event on the Wednesday evening to kick off that event. So, again, great partnerships and cooperation in and around Story County. And we also had the opportunity to host the Iowa Association of County Supervisors for a day. So big summer that's winding up. Also with the increased enrollment at Iowa State, the students coming back and orientation just provided a lot of visitors to the area. A couple of things that I handed out to you were that community grant program, and we are in the first phase of that. Applications are accepted now through October 10th, I believe. And this year we will have a record amount. We will have almost $70,000 to distribute through that community grant program to different events. Also, you have a calendar of events for the next 12 months, and then you have the new visitor's guide, which is SITES, and that is the new visitor's guide to Ames and Iowa State University. And this time we were able to expand that by 4 pages, and we hope with additional advertisers we'll be able to expand it by another 4 pages. We print it 3 times a year and would like to involve more local and countywide events as we get closer in there. So just expanding the information that's distributed. I also talked to Central Iowa Tourism Region this morning, and Story County is one of the first counties to have paid their dues. So thank you for your support of the tourism industry and Central Iowa Tourism. There are a significant amount of changes that are happening between the regions and the State Tourism Office. So a little update, and we'll gather more
information. You say regions. Are you speaking of the border regions through the university? Or?
No, through the three tourism regions.
The three, okay.
The right. Eastern, Central, and Western tourism region. The Iowa Department of Tourism is reorganizing a little bit and looking at how they distribute their funds to those regions. The matching funds that Story County gives to all the members provide us with opportunities for grants and various other things. Those grants are now going to be administered at the state level rather than at the regional level. And the involvement with the tourism office, participation in their conference, participation in CITR meetings, and the support of the county are all required before you can get grants now. There is a webinar this afternoon that will explain to all the members of Central Iowa Tourism Region how they can apply for those grants in the future, but it will be a different process. Also, there is $25,000 in new monies that the state is putting into the Central Iowa Tourism Region, and that is for project funds, and that board will be able to put together a proposal for those funds and how they'll be used. So there's additional state funds coming to the regions. Also, they have changed their educational programs from a $3,000 contribution to an $8,500 contribution to get a higher level of educational opportunities at the regional levels, again, for our meetings. So I think that will really help a lot of the smaller destinations and some of the smaller attractions to be able to participate at the regional level. They also have, each region has now 10 scholarships, so if there's anyone in Story County that would like to attend the tourism conference representing either Story County or an attraction, there are 10 scholarships this year for that conference, and it is in Waterloo in October. Actually some exciting things as the tourism office redistributes and looks at how they fund and how they do the matching funds to the regions. They also continue to have several marketing opportunities. Last week, we participated in Meetings Marketplace, which was held in Des Moines, and that brought in meeting planners to meet with the various attractions and communities. In October, we'll participate in both the Travel Iowa Marketplace, which is group tours that are coming to the area, and then also the tourism conference. So Central Iowa Tourism is quite active as well, and lots of positive changes.
Outstanding.
Questions?
Can you give us an update on Convention Flat Space and what's going on there?
I can. On September 10th, the Chamber and Convention and Visitors Bureau in Ames will be approaching the Ames City Council to do one final study, and it has to do with funding models for such space. As we continue to look, we've done two studies, one a market analysis and then also one on the building plan, what it would cost, where it could be located. The final study will give us an idea of what we can expect from private investment, whether it be from a management company, whether it be for naming rights, or the potential of having a hotel partnership built on site. So we're looking at all those numbers to look at what the final public funding might need to be. Since we do not have a casino in the general area, which is how all other convention spaces have been funded in the state of Iowa, we're really looking for a private involvement as well. Once that study is in, we are then looking at how we will break this project into multiple phases. And the phases are not necessarily will happen in the order, but they're just different phases for funding opportunities. One phase would be the actual square footage and the footprint attached to the Scheman building. Another phase would be the upgrade of Scheman, which if you've been to Scheman lately, they have already started a lot of their own upgrading. The university has addressed the walkways there. They have also remodeled everything on the ground floor, and they have done a lot of flood mitigation to meet the new codes for the ground floor. So all that remodeling has already begun. A new south entryway would be another phase project. As you look at the Scheman Courtyard and that whole area between Hilton Scheman and Stevens, it is being revamped and remodeled with some of the walkways going down. And at some point, there'd be an opportunity to literally dress up and add some curb appeal to the south side of Scheman so you'd actually know where to enter the building. And then the fourth part of this would be the private involvement and the potential of a private developer for a hotel. So we're looking at dividing it into those four sections.
Outstanding. Thank you. Any other questions for Julie?
Oh, just a phenomenal job. Just appreciate all your efforts and work.
Thanks very much.
Thanks for being here today. Other reports, TIF funding update, Lucy Martin, and I think I see Stacy Herridge coming up too.
Yes.
Good morning.
Morning. I do have a visual aid, which is what was included in your board packet. There we go. Okay. The August 6th meeting, you had a sort of extensive update from Leanne Harder. One of the requests was that the auditor come and give you an update on TIF projects and spending. So that's what we have for you today. We're only projecting through the end of this fiscal year. There are so many unknowns right now. Anything we do with TIF is always an estimate, but with the new rollback, commercial property, as well as, we basically just use last year's levies to project this year. So we're just giving you what we have right now. This is just a version of something that Lisa Markley had put together. I show the spending that we did in the last fiscal year on Dakins and Vetter paving. Those projects are complete. What we expect to spend this year on Dakins and the bike trail. The 3.185 is what we bonded for. And then there is a deficit there, so I show that under projected spending for FY14. That's not to say that $15,000 has to come from this pool, but it's a good thing to pull from. Your final balance, that's a cumulative, so we do know the 11,369. That's what we ended the year with. If we spend what we project, then we would end up with the $25,000 at the end of next fiscal year. So things for you to consider today are, you know, how you want to allocate the projected ending fund balance. We also just have a few comments on the TIF process itself, just things to keep in mind. It might be a really good idea to have the assessors come talk to you, whether it's as the Board of Review or as the Board of Supervisors, about the impact of the rollback and how that's going to affect all taxing entities, just, you know, for our upcoming budget year. If the board is entertaining an amendment to the urban renewal area, the TIF, or your TIF projects, the last board meeting before you would have to submit your plan is November 26th. So you would have to work back from that date. That is the week of Thanksgiving, so it's a short week. Travel plans, things like that. In looking at your applicants for from the smaller communities, we did notice that five of them already use TIF themselves. We didn't know if you wanted to weight that in your application process.
Explain a little bit what you're thinking about there when you talk about weighting that as far as the process. How do you envision consideration of that concept?
Well, I mean, do you want to give priority to communities that don't use urban renewal? Because with the communities that do, they're doing that for economic development purposes. And when you do that, whenever you use TIF, you take away from your base to do specific projects. So do you want to, are these communities that could add those projects to the TIF they already have? Or have they created a situation for themselves where they don't have funding because of TIF to do the things that they want to do?
It's just something to think about. Okay, great.
And we can certainly provide you more information when you start reviewing each applicant.
I think that's a great point. My hope as we go through this process that Leanne is really leading us through is that you guys will be available to come back
right.
and make sure that we're considering all of those factors
right.
as
yeah.
we look at these.
So we're just throwing those out today. And just another thing, what we would like to have, you know, not today, but just something for you to consider today. If you are going to amend your urban renewal area or add TIF projects, is there a floor? Is there an increment dollar that would trigger that? You know, are you going to look at the is there a sort of base increment dollar figure that you would gain every year that would make it or cost effective to amend your project? Because when you do amend it, there is a lengthy process. Resolutions, ordinance readings, consultation meetings with all the affected entities. So sort of a break-even point where you wouldn't do it for something this small, but you would do it for anything larger than X dollars. So we're really sort of refining our process here because it's so new.
Brand new, absolutely.
Things to consider.
Right.
And when we talk through that, Lucy, is that something we've got to consider on a project by project basis, or can we view some of that as, okay, we're dealing with all these applications at once and clearly there's a bottom line figure? Just tell me how you're referring to that.
About amending
yeah.
what you do. Oh, we took a really simple one wind turbine, okay? One wind turbine gets you dollar-wise, in the first year, $1,430. So how many, you know, wind turbines do you need to make it cost-effective for you to add something to the TIF?
Right. Okay.
I mean, would you do it for $1,400, or do you need $1.4 million or something in between?
And how do you view, or how should we consider viewing the dollars over the life of the project. So, it's $1,400 that first year, but as that ramps up at the 5% a year, then it becomes more substantial down the road. And so how would we view that?
Right. I mean, do you want to look at it over the whole lifetime? Whenever you add something to TIF, you are essentially you're creating a new TIF district with a new timeline. So you're actually extending the life of the urban renewal process. So at some point it's going to be by itself.
Yeah.
You can always take stuff out early. The amendment process. There's publication costs. There's time costs. Administrative costs. Do you want to consider those or not?
I think it's important that we do consider all of that as we have this conversation.
Right, and you might also want to consider, which taxing authorities we're talking about is the same ones that we already are hitting, or is it better to look in other areas of the county?
Right. I think those are great points.
So.
Absolutely.
Could be some exciting discussion coming on.
First time through these things.
Right. Yeah.
I firmly believe that this year really, really important that we go through, even if it takes us a little longer, even if it's a little more tedious, it's important that we go through every single step and look at every single thing as we make our decisions.
Right.
So we're appreciative of any advice and information you can give us.
This is the first year we really have to do the new reports. So it's a learning process for us, also for the DOM. and then with the new property tax changes, everything is going to be refined again. So,
yeah, but important to know where we start, and then this is the first time that we're going to look at adding anything in terms of the new wind turbines that are coming online. Look at the possibility of adding anything, and just knowing what our process is and what our thresholds are, if any, makes a lot of sense.
And then making sure that we have the timeline. We give ourselves enough time to do anything that we would like to do.
Absolutely. Well, now you've looked at the timeline that's been laid before us. Is there anything, any red flags that you see in that timeline?
I'm just that 11/26 date is really, if we work back from there.
Okay. And I think we've given ourselves room
to
work back. Leanne, you feel pretty secure where we are, don't you? Okay, good.
I mean, it's August, but it's going to be November really soon.
It happens fast, absolutely.
So it's good that we're talking about it now.
Other questions for Lucy or Stacy? Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank Stacy and also Lisa Markley for all the analysis.
Outstanding.
Thank you.
Lucy, I don't know if you have anywhere you need to go to. If you wouldn't mind sticking around, you and Renee, when we get to announcements, I want to talk about tax statements. Okay, so next item is discussion of Ripple Effect Services, Susan Costner. Hi, Susan. Welcome.
I also have Larry Springer from Polo Telephone.
Outstanding. And
I have some materials I need to hand out, so I'm going to do that first. Oh, Leon, thanks. We have one.
Okay. Thank you.
Leon, do you mind also doing this? Thank you, Mr. Chair, Member Clinton, Member Toot. My name is Sue Costner. I work with Iowa Area Development Group, and what I just handed out, the first item that Leanne handed you is our program services and staff brochure. And some of you may know about us, some of you may not know about us, but we've been in business a little over 27 years. We've been working with the rural electric cooperatives those years in partnership with the generating and transmitting companies around the state. So SIPCO, Central Iowa Power, NIPCO, Northwest Iowa Power, Corn Belt Energy up in Humboldt, and others. What we do is we provide economic development facilitation services to those rural electric cooperatives. About 7 years ago, we entered into a partnership with Iowa Network Services, the company that is the fiber platform for all of the independent telecom companies in the state, of which Colo Telephone is one and is a shareholder in Iowa Network Services. 7 years ago, INS decided that they wanted to partner in economic development services, but they didn't want to create their own program. So they entered into a partnership with us at IADG, and we have, for the last 6 years, performed those contract services for all of the independent telecoms. You're fortunate in your county because you have several independents that are very progressive, very aggressive, and Larry's here today to tell a story about their services and how it's going to benefit the growth and the future development of Story County. But what I wanted to do was just to share with you the program that we have called Ripple Effect. Leanne and I met after you entered into your partnership with the Chamber, the Ames Chamber, to provide the Small Cities Initiative work that you're going to be doing over the next year's basis. And I contacted Leanne because our program, Ripple Effect, plays into that very well. We have a combined loan and grant program through the telecoms. Now, what we do, INS comes in behind the local telephone company, the local telecom, and provides either grant or direct loan assistance. I'll start with the grant program first because that's really designed and geared toward public bodies and nonprofits. We have a grant program that matches what the local telecom is willing to come in for, up to $5,000. So we make $10,000 available for planning initiatives, A to Z, really airports to zoning. We've done in the second piece that I handed out, which is the large, this piece right here, which is an annual report. It'll give you an idea of some of the programs and projects we've been involved in. But our grants go to assisting communities in their planning initiatives. When we designed the program, we asked ourselves, what isn't being funded any longer, about 6-7 years ago? And we realized nobody has planning money any longer. So INS put money on the table for planning initiatives, up to $10,000. So your real partner in this is the local telecom. It's Colo Telephone, it's Minerva Valley, it's Huxley Communications. It's those partners that you would partner with at the local level for that funding. INS comes in and backstops what the local telecom is willing to do on that grant basis. So again, the grants are designed strictly for public bodies and for nonprofits, not for business and industry. In addition to the grant program, we also have a direct loan assistance program, and that is money, gap financing, I guess, if you will, for small, medium to large size businesses. And INS comes in again on a matching basis and matches up to $75,000 to make $150,000 available to business and industry. Again, it's gap financing. It's not intended to finance a total project. It doesn't do that these days, of course. But it does go a long way toward making feasible a small business, a home-based business, a web-based business, something that many of us from an entrepreneurial standpoint know is very important in economic development these days. We also have access to a number of different programs and technical assistance packaging and financial packaging. And what we do is we write USDA applications for business and industry. We write RISE applications for cities. We do new market tax credit applications. We just do a number of different things that help bring additional financing to business and industry and those projects that you're doing throughout your county. When we met with Leanne, we realized that there's probably some synergy here between your Small Cities Initiative and what you're hoping to gain through that program for your cities under 2,000 and under population. So I wanted to bring the Ripple Effect information to you, but also tell the story today of Colo Telephone and what Larry's doing in terms of expanding his broadband offerings, because it is it's quite impressive, and I wanted to give a little bit of time to Larry to explain what that is.
Good morning.
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 Basically, Colo Telephone, a small independent telephone company that partners with IDGA and INS. We built fiber to the home throughout our existing area over there in Colo in 2005 through 2009. The one thing we lacked was complete ring, redundant route capability. Our toll, our 911 circuits all went down through Collins, Maxwell to Huxley to end up at INS. after the 2008 flood that washed that fiber out, and our E911 was down for a day and a half because of the fiber break, the board decided that we needed to get redundancy. So we looked at building a route over to the north part of Ames with a fiber route. And in doing that, last year, we were able to do some offshoots to some cell towers, to the business park, to Vetter's new business area. This summer, we've added down to Carmelli's and Brown Supply, Holub's over in that area. And we're looking at other offshoots in the future, areas that are looking for better broadband services, and also out in the rural. There's a lot of areas in Story County that they can't even get 1.5 meg of broadband service. That on that map you have there over at Country Estates and Tullamore on North Dayton there, they didn't even have dial-up services, all they had out there. Out of 104 houses, we got fiber to 102 of them, and we have over 80 of them turned up and working on our broadband services today, and we're adding more. We're partnering with Iowa Development Group, with LaVon here in Nevada, Dan over in Ames. We're looking at opportunities to add more broadband services to business or rural areas. So,
I think, Larry, are you also, I don't know if you've lit up the Gilbert school system, but you're...
We have a fiber up to the Gilbert school that was just turned up 2 weeks ago.
Color code on this map. Yellow is existing.
Yep.
Red and blue?
The red is what we are working on. Blue is possibilities. We do a survey, and we're doing another survey this year, but that area between Colo and Nevada was an area we were looking at doing this summer. We didn't really get enough response back to make a good business case. We'll keep looking at that. But
why don't you send your material out again?
Okay.
There's been a change in the service in that area.
This is you, right?
Yeah.
I mean, this is you directly. Yeah.
So yeah, send your information out again. You might get some takers.
Okay, but we survey an area. We had another area over by the winery there in the north area, 80 some houses. We didn't get a very good response. MediaCom and CenturyLink are both there. It's a perception,
sure.
And once the we just need to get in there and get some service going. Our main thing is we're local. When you call in and talk to repair services, you're going to talk to a person, not a auto attendant and somebody out of state. So
what did you estimate your total service connection is right now, approximately?
We have about 550 customers in Colo.
Colo.
And yeah. We're a little over 100 on outside, this new on route the, that right. We have built.
What's exciting is that, as Larry mentioned, the personal service. It's the homegrown company that you're dealing with. It's not somebody in Denver or somewhere else on a remote basis. But that's that is the motif of the Ripple Effect program as well. And what I was excited by when I talked with Leanne and I think it's Drew Camp at the Ames Chamber was that the Ripple Effect, what we've done is you look through some of those projects in our last annual report. What we're trying to do is find projects that are replicable that we can take all over the state. And that's what we've done over the last 6 years is work with the investment that Iowa Network Services has made and that the local telecoms are willing to make as partners with you. And so we're interested in unique projects. And we thought that what you were doing was unique. I don't think there's any other state any other county in the state that's doing what you're doing with your small cities initiative. So we were excited by that and would like to see if we can participate in some way and partner with you.
Absolutely. Talk me through, sorry, Wayne, right. talk me through
a possible vision of what that partnership might look like? Because I am really, really intrigued. But what I'm wondering is, short of us setting these kind of initiatives and really trying to get out and help these smaller communities help themselves and having Leanne and her staff working with them and now the contract with the AEDC and Dan Culhane and his staff to help these smaller cities, okay, so we've put forward the dollars and the interest in doing that. Outside of doing those kind of things, what can be, at this level, the county's involvement in,
yes,
in issues like this?
Well, this is one that Leanne and I talked about. And Leanne, bear with me here if I'm spilling any beans. But one of the concepts we talked about was an incubator. Now, not every small town can have an incubator that grows businesses. But they can come together and have one incubator where they can start to send their young people, their people with ideas, their vision people. That we could help you develop an incubator of that sort to help bring the resources to that incubator that would bring those young people to a spot on the road, name it. It doesn't matter to us where you have it, but an incubator would be one of those concepts that we could help with. The partners would be the telephone companies coming into that, INS, Iowa Network Services could be a partner, of course yourselves and others who might want to be part of that. I don't know if there's an SBDC in this part of the state, the Small Business Development Centers. I don't know if that's out of Iowa State here or not, but there are a number of partners that could come to bear on a project like that. That's just one.
Sure.
And there are others that we could brainstorm about, but that's one we did talk about specifically.
The question that I had is this model being replicated in other areas around the state?
The Ripple Effect program is statewide because we have about 147 independent telecoms that are shareholders in Iowa Network Services. So we have done projects in every part of the state, but nothing like what you're doing. Supervisor Clinton.
Well, the reason I asked the question is, I serve on the Iowa Association of Counties Technology Steering Committee, which I name now has changed. It's called COSTAR. And we've been talking about broadband deployment statewide for almost four and a half years now. And obviously, a lot of it has to do with cost and availability of how you get out and reach the customers in a particular market area and who can provide that level of service. And what I'm hearing, and it's sounding like this may be something that our committee would benefit from, just understanding what you guys are already doing in this particular area and try to help. Maybe we could help facilitate the marketing of the concept on a much broader basis. And Robin Harlow from the Iowa Association of Counties is the head of our group, our COSTAR group, and it's made up of supervisors, IT directors from around the state. And we have each affiliate of the Iowa Association of Counties has at least two members serving on this technology board. And the whole purpose of it, again, is to expand technology services to many of the underserved communities, because we've got some areas that don't even have an IT department in some of our counties, but yet we know that the need for broadband service would enhance those individuals and communities greatly. And so I was just wondering if I would send your information, contact to Robin, and see if maybe you'd be willing to get on our agenda and just give us an opportunity to learn a little bit more about what you're doing.
There are stories like Larry's all over the state,
right.
And Larry can
yep.
speak to that.
And of all the groups, Iowa Telephone Association and the Rural Iowa Telephone Association and INS has a Iowa Linked Up website with all this information.
Okay.
And
okay, great.
They're all the small towns,
right. All the small towns
that are served, right. And actually have a very robust fiber network throughout the state, which actually duplicates most of the ICN network too. So.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Because I realize that the ICN usage is from the county, from a government standpoint, is not something that we, are able to utilize. And I don't know if that's ever going to come to reality, but I got a hunch that right now it's not. The technology is advancing so much, it's not going to be cost effective for us to continue to explore that option. So we're probably going to see that just go away. Yeah.
Good. Well, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued by the concept of the possibility of some kind of incubator, in my mind, outside and away from the Iowa State Research Park, which kind of provides its own component associated with Iowa State, but having something else in the area, I think, could be something that could be really, really beneficial if we could find a way to get that done. I'm intrigued about any kind of partnership that we can find. I think this board is going to continue to push Leanne, and I think Leanne's been welcoming of this, but push Leanne to continue to think outside the box. She's done a phenomenal job here with this board, really giving us these opportunities to explore different ways that a board of supervisors can impact its local communities and economic development. So I would just ask if we could stay in touch. And Leanne, I had one question for you. How does any of this conversation relate to the Connect Iowa study that's being done right now? Maybe it doesn't relate at all, but it just struck me that maybe it doesn't. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Larry.
From my outside view, I think what the Connect Iowa study will show and demonstrate where the gaps are, if any, which will then allow providers such as Colotel and local providers and the non-local providers to identify those gaps and develop a plan to provide additional services or enhance where limited services are. But it will also provide Story County a baseline then. If we get requests for some sort of assistance or if we are approached by some sort of a industry or business that's looking to locate in a certain area, we can help direct that more efficiently or even use it as an opportunity to request funding for different enhancements. What it does, it sets our baseline and allows us to use them for marketing and different avenues.
Okay. Well, I would encourage you, Leanne, to continue where appropriate having conversations with Sue and this idea of the ripple effect. I know you've mentioned to me once before this idea of an incubator, in fact, looking at sites that you like for that incubator. I'd encourage you to keep that on your radar. And for me, we've got to get into this initiative that we've just set and see how that goes before we bite off something else. But it's something I want to keep looking at. I don't know if you guys have anything to add.
Just exciting opportunities this could have. So
yep. I'm
very encouraged.
I am guilty. I'm the one that invited Sue to come. I think this is a wonderful program that we'll have, and it's involved with three entities here in Story County in our rural communities, more rural communities. And anytime there's an opportunity to provide some education for you all as the decision makers in Story County on possible programs for funding or whatever it may be, I mean, your blessing, take the opportunity to get them before you.
I think we're really appreciative of you bringing them before us. It sounds to me like this is the kind of program that has the real opportunity of dovetailing really nicely with some of the things we're trying to do. Just for me right now, we're so new at what we're trying to do. I've got to see how all of that's going to kind of come together before I can recognize what that next step is, but I'm so appreciative to know that there is this next step kind of thing out there, and I would hope that you guys would keep talking about it and keep us informed. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Matt.
Sue, Larry, mm-hmm. Thanks for being here today.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Let's see where we are. We are down to public forum number 2. This is an opportunity for members of the public to comment on items not on this agenda. Board may not take action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but we may do so in the future. Anybody wishing to address the board? Seeing no one move into the microphone, we'll go on to liaison assignments and committee meeting updates. Wayne.
Just very quickly, yesterday I did meet with Deb Schulroth on my regularly scheduled liaison meeting. We primarily talked about some of the things on the agenda today, the 28E that was being presented, and just an update on some of the personnel issues. And we also, she gave me a document or some information regarding a meeting that I'll have tomorrow with Rick Schultz and Director Palmer as a part of the ISAC group. This is our every other month meeting to stay engaged with DHS on not only the mental health area, but other human service efforts throughout the state. And so one of the things that she wanted me to be sure to talk about has a lot to do with the 812 commitment and some of the disputed billing that has continued to be very problematic for not only Story County but other counties for a number of years, and what some of the most recent legislation, Senate File 452, it really did not clear up one of the main areas as far as those clients that end up in Toledo and Oakdale and things of this nature. And I hope to at least keep this on the radar with Director Palmer in our meeting tomorrow. And so she's sending me some additional information later today to take down as well. So then tomorrow, I mentioned that that meeting will happen in the afternoon from about 1:30 to 3:30 at the Iowa Association of Counties office. And earlier in the day, around 10 o'clock, I will be attending the State Implementation Committee. This is a gubernatorial appointment to a committee that is looking at detention in the state of Iowa. We have members representing the DMC subcommittee and the school-to-court issues, and there's some strategic planning and a detention screening tool that is being discussed. And Judge Hoffmeyer out of Sioux County, Sioux City, is the chair of that group. And so we meet on a quarterly basis, and that should, again, be some interesting information in terms of the types of things that are happening statewide to look at how individuals actually go from school-related discipline situations to be a part of the court system. So I look forward to participating in that. So with that, the only other thing I wanted to basically maybe take a moment of personal privilege, but I could do that on the announcement from supervisors too. But I just wanted to reference tomorrow, as you know, as we celebrate the 50th anniversary of the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I Have a Dream speech in the 1963 March in Washington. You know, for me, that has personal significance because, you know, I was in school during that time, experienced many of the challenges with segregated facilities and the opportunities that were beginning to unfold. And it wasn't until 1968 that Dr. King's death that it really impacted me in terms of what I could do. And my principal, the late Don Carlson, allowed me to infuse the civil rights struggle into my curriculum. And I carried that through for many years. And then last Sunday night, my wife and I and my daughter, we went and saw The Butler. And I would have to say that if anyone has never seen, haven't seen that movie, I would really encourage them to take a look at that. Just a phenomenal story about a White House butler who worked with many presidents, but it brought back memories of the struggle for equal opportunities and equal rights that I had talked about and taught, but it had a very special meaning for me. And tomorrow I'll eagerly be anticipating the president's speech as we talk about what has happened in this country 50 years after this historic event. And I would not be here, I believe, had it not been for much of what unfolded during the civil rights period at that time. So I just wanted to acknowledge that, and more or less as a point of personal pride, and realizing that today I believe that there are signs of change in the voting rights bill that could have tremendous consequences in future years. I'm not saying there are those that are not trying to deny the right, but they are making it difficult for individuals to be able to participate fully in the whole voting rights arena, and that's a direct change from the March on Selma, where my grandfather participated in. Both my grandfather and my sister, who has passed on, was in the 63 March in Washington, D.C. So it's a special time for me to reflect on that time.
Well, I'm so appreciative that you do. You know, it's really, really interesting. Man of your age, and your ethnicity, growing up through the Civil Rights Movement, me somewhat younger, but growing up in Birmingham, Alabama, of all places, in the 60s. And so the differing perspectives that you and I have of what went on there, I just think it's a phenomenal testament to how far we've come. Not that we're near the end, but how far we've come that you and I, with those two different backgrounds, can be sitting together on this board. So thank you for sharing that with us. Paul, any liaison assignments?
Now I kind of wished I did, but I don't. So
okay. Announcements for the supervisors. Wayne, do you have anything else to add?
Nope.
Paul, anything?
No.
The only thing I want to talk about, Lucy and Renee, we've got both our treasurer and our auditor here. It was brought to my attention, and I think several others' attention yesterday, as our tax statements had gone out, that for our rural residents, we did have a change in the formatting on these that actually showed an increase that is not actual. And so, Renee and Lucy, I'd love it if you guys would come up so we can address that. I would say I went home and I looked at my tax statement last night, and I was really, really pleasantly surprised as you look through, living there in Ames, look through at all the increases in places that I was paying more, that for Story County, the total levy, it showed a decrease of, I think, 6.71%, and so I feel really, really good about that. But Renee, I'll turn to you first, since you were the first phone call I made when I got the question.
Well, in essence, it's right, but it's wrong, because you're not comparing apples to apples. It's apples to oranges, which we know. And yes, the phone started ringing yesterday, and we typed up a somewhat of a script, so everybody says the same thing over and over, and they don't say something wrong. So my question is, I feel we should do something on the internet or on our website. I don't know if it really calls for a press release or not, and I'm going to leave that up to you guys. I'll gladly work with Lucy and yourselves to get something put together if you feel we need to do that. But
Lucy, your thoughts?
Yeah, what happened was last year we showed just a portion of the levy. It's compared this year to the entire levy. So those are two radically different numbers, and it looks, 10 times what it was, or 800%, something like that.
871% increase.
Right. So they're compared last year's just the 395 rural levy to the total, whatever dollar figure that is, to the total amount that rural residents pay. And
yep.
So.
And your staff is fairly well versed. And I see you got Stacey's Heritage with you, who's our expert.
Who's already losing a hair.
She sent out something to our group yesterday, probably halfway through the day. We have rural residents that work in the office. That was brought to our attention. We did a little research. And so I think the brunt of the phone calls, since everything goes out under the treasurer's name, go to Renee. Renee and I had a nice conversation and just to make sure that everybody knows what rural residents are paying for with their rural levies.
So. And that's probably a good thing, because a lot of the residents are calling saying, well, what do I get for my rural services? So, Lucy and I had that conversation, and she typed it out and listed it, because, we're like, well, we could rattle off a few things, but not everything. And that was something, it's a good thing. It's good for them to be aware of what they do get as a reminder that, they get something for it. So I think that's a positive of this little.
Absolutely. Yeah. For me, Lucy, your feeling is a full-blown press release needed. I'm in complete agreement that we need to get something up on the website. We need to all be speaking the same language when people have questions. Make sure that everybody understands that the tax statements and what it shows in terms of what is owed on the tax statements is absolutely correct for everybody. The numbers are actually correct.
It's just the comparison from year to year. We didn't compare the same numbers. Yeah. So
what's your feeling on a full-blown press release? Is it necessary?
Yeah, I just, you know, we just had a nice chat about broadband availability in the rural areas. So probably the people that are calling are the ones that, you know,
don't have
may
it.
Have. So do they read the paper? It's never a bad thing to sort of blanket. At the same time, I guess we do want to be clear that nobody's tax statement is wrong. It's just comparing the dollars from year to year. We use two different numbers.
Would it be appropriate if the board asked the two of you to work together to put together some kind of release that we can also put on the website and just get it out, just clarifying exactly what happened?
Wayne, Paul, you guys okay with that?
Yeah, I really.
I think it's public information. It's a service that would go well, even for, I mean, there's going to be some that are not going to understand of this, and if they do have questions, they will contact you individually. And I think it just lessens the whole anxiety and the chance of incorrect information kind of being put out there. So I think that would be a very appropriate.
Yeah, anything to sort of lessen that.
Absolutely, whatever. And it won't hurt my feelings at all if, as you guys work on that, you note that the overall levy rate and the rural levy rate has gone down the last few years, that we've got a balanced budget for the first time in a long, long time, and that actual spending is way down year over year when you compare the FY13 ending to what we've done in the past. But at the end of the day, it's you guys that are going to be getting the calls. And so if we can just be on this, all on the same page, please make sure that whatever we do, we share with Jan and Darla, since a lot of times they get the phone calls, and that would be outstanding.
How many calls
you can
have you
even forward it to us.
I've only got one.
Hmm? You can even forward the, all the information to the three of us. That way, like you said, everybody's got on the same page.
Oh, sure. As we can do that.
Outstanding.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Any other announcements? Okay, next item is 18, and it's a request to go into closed session. I will turn to Jessica Reynolds, our civil attorney, and to read us in.
Good morning to the Board of Supervisors. Pursuant to Iowa Code Section 21.5, Sub 1, Sub C, the County Attorney's Office respectfully requests that the Board move into closed session to discuss strategy with counsel in matters that are presently in litigation, where its disclosure would be likely to prejudice or disadvantage the position of the governmental body in that litigation.
I would move that we go into closed session.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Toot.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. We will stand in recess from open session and reconvene in closed session in 5 minutes. You ready for us in open? All right. Reconvening in open session, coming out of closed session. Jessica, I'd ask that you get us back into open session.
It is 12:01 in the afternoon, and we are in open session after ending closed session. No action is required at this time.
Very good. Any other matters for the Board of Supervisors? I would entertain a motion to adjourn.
So move.
Second. I have a motion and a second. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned. Lucy, this is for Shelley, these two right here.
I'm going over to Midwest Insurance for